191, Rigetti versus State. Counsel, are we ready to proceed? Aye. Ms. Craig?
Can I reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal, please?
Yes.
Appreciate that. During the course of a kidnapping, a sexual assault, and a robbery, I stabbed Alyssa Otrembo, causing her death. That's Mr. Rigetti's out loud, on-the-record allocution in open court. It's a felony murder allocution all day long, unmistakably, clearly, no question about it. He said that on the record. The court heard it. In fact, the district court judge noted, all he gave me was felony murder. He did not give me premeditation and deliberation. The court understood what Mr. Rigetti was pleading to. The state did not. At the end of a lengthy and thorough and long plea canvas, the court accepted Mr. Rigetti's plea, and at the state's, in fact, the court even asked the state, are you content with the plea allocution? The state said yes, and the state insisted that he be adjudicated, and he was. It wasn't until weeks later when we filed some motions that the state discovered the consequences of the plea only being to felony murder, because they apparently didn't read it and realize it at the time, and they objected.
Is that your intention, though?
Beg your pardon?
Is that your intention to do this, to eliminate the aggravating circumstances?
Yes, it was. I read McConnell and Wilson, and in Wilson, Mr. Wilson pled both felony murder and to premeditation and deliberation, and the court said, you can't use McConnell, you can't try to strike aggravators if you pled to both. So yes, it was my intention to plead only, or Mr. Rigetti's intention, only to plead guilty to felony murder. Now, I anticipated that the minute he did that allocution that I just laid out for you, that the state would pay attention the way the court paid attention. I expected to argue whether or not he could plead to one theory or two theories or three theories or what the law would be, because there's no law in Nevada on it. This is an unusual circumstance. It's not every day that somebody who's facing first-degree capital murder pleads guilty and intends to just go to penalty phase.
Ms. Craig, did you indicate to the court or to the state that you were only going to plead to something other than what was stated in what was before the court, the formal written documents?
I notified the court that he was pleading guilty to all counts. He did plead guilty to all counts. My position was going to be, in the event the state objected, was that he did not necessarily have to plead to all three of the state's theories. He did have to plead guilty to all counts, which he in fact did. Did you have another question?
What is your, how do you reconcile the United States versus Royce, a Supreme Court case from 1989 that talks about documents before the court? The court itself doesn't have any authority to change that document, and if the defendant pleads guilty, they're pleading guilty to the entire document.
I intended to argue that he was entitled to plead guilty to count 10 and could plead guilty to two of the state's theories, or one of the state's theories. That was going to be my argument, and we would argue it in front of the district court judge. She would hear arguments, and she'd make a ruling, and then it would be part of the record for appellate purposes later. That's what I intended. It's my position, and it's been my position, that pleading guilty to count 10 doesn't necessarily, or pleading guilty to one particular count, doesn't necessarily require the defendant to plead to all of the state's theories. It gets to the same place. He pled guilty to first-degree murder, and he was facing the death penalty as a result of that plea. Whether in Nevada, it's really sort of an open question about whether or not it's necessary to plead to all the state's theories. That would have been a meaty and interesting legal argument had the state objected at the time. They didn't complain about it. They didn't notice it. They didn't, whatever their reason was, it wasn't objected to at the time. The court accepted the plea. It was a valid plea. He was adjudicated, and we moved on. The question in front of the court is whether or not that court is entitled to undo that guilty plea. And if so, what are the grounds necessary in order to undo a plea that's been accepted and adjudicated after the fact, belatedly? And in this case, there are no grounds. I understand that the underlying issue about whether or not a defendant has to plead guilty to all theories is interesting, and it's a point of contention, And it would be something that probably has to be decided at some point in the event this ever raises again. But our purpose here today is, can that plea be withdrawn? And if so, under what grounds? The state coming in and saying, we didn't notice, we didn't hear it, we weren't aware of what it is you were doing, we didn't notice that it was a felony murder plea, that's not grounds to undo a presumptively valid plea. And we know that because most of the plea, the jurisprudence on whether or not you can undo pleas is for defendants who try to undo pleas. And we know what the burden is on defendants when the pleas are out loud in open court, when the canvas is thorough and complete. They just can't walk in and say, I didn't really hear it, I didn't really understand it. There is a higher burden. That burden should be the same for the state. They were there, they heard the plea, they had a duty to object, and then we could have had those arguments about whether or not he is entitled to plead to one theory, two theories, or must plead to all three theories. And that would have been heard. That was the time to do it. They did not timely object. And as a result, they've lost the ability to have that plea undone. And this plea was undone because the judge went to the underlying argument, the one they should have made at the time of the plea, and made a decision on that. It is and was a presumptively valid plea. He was adjudicated. And the Ninth Circuit has told us that jeopardy attaches when a plea is valid and is accepted. And it wasn't the fault of the defendant. He said his plea out loud.
Well, if there was a miscommunication, which has been represented, that there was a misunderstanding as to what the plea was, that you shook your head no when you had eye contact with the judge as to some of the other theories, and it was found that there was a misunderstanding with regard to the plea, would that make the plea invalid?
Well, first, there wasn't a misunderstanding with regard to the plea. The judge's order granting the state's request to withdraw the plea says that he's not, that she found that he was not able or not legally entitled to plead to one or two theories, but instead must plead to all three theories. So that was the findings that she made in her order. But with regard to what happened in court, the allocution that he made was felony murder. That's the only allocution that he made with regard to count 10 with regard to the first degree murder. I was aware that it was felony murder, so was the judge. The colloquy was between the two of them. She reports and says over and over again that she understood what was going on. She understood that it was felony murder, and that she understood that there was no evidence and no allocution with regard to premeditation and deliberation. So the colloquy between the defendant and the judge was clear. There was no miscommunication, and she never says that she didn't understand. What happens is that we get to the part where she's getting ready to read off the theories, and I am anxious because I'm anticipating the state jumping up and saying, what's going on? What are you doing? We need to argue this. I'm on the balls of my feet. I'm ready to start the arguments. The judge starts reading off the theories, and I'm getting ready to interrupt, and she says, oh, not that theory. She says it out loud. She looks right at me. I shake my head, not that theory, and she moves on because she was clearly aware that he was only pleading to felony murder. The fact that they didn't hear her say only that theory, I can't explain that. That's for them to explain. But they didn't object timely to his plea to the theories, and therefore they essentially waived it. There was no miscommunication between the two most important people, which is the judge and the defendant, because the colloquy between the two of them is the meeting of the minds that's important. The judge has to understand, and she evidences through all of the arguments that we had, that she understood what he was pleading to, and that was felony murder theory.
Counsel, you know, you talk about the clarity. I'm sitting here looking at this discussion on the record.
Yes.
And it says the defendant, the court, and did you that? That act was willful, deliberate, and premeditated. And then there's a pause. It's the other theory, pause. Okay. It was perpetrated by means of torture and or committed during the preparation or attempt to preparation or of robbery and or kidnapping and or sexual assault. The defendant, yes, Your Honor. Is that clear?
Yes.
To what they were pleading to?
It absolutely was. First, because his actual allocution was, during the course of a sexual assault, a kidnapping, and a robbery, I stabbed her, causing her death. That's the actual factual basis. When she gets to the three theories, she says, oh, not that theory, meaning not premeditation and deliberation. And the most important person for determining whether or not there was a miscommunication is the district court judge. And she says, through all of the arguments, we had two separate days of arguments in February and March, I believe, that she understood all along. And in fact, she goes on to make a point that no one asked her to make sure that, to make a factual basis for premeditation and deliberation. Nobody asked her to do that. It was all
required because the state, the charge before the court had not been altered. Was it necessary? The charge stood. The charge had not been altered in any way.
I'm not sure I understand what you're asking me.
I'm asking you, basically, had the document been altered, had it deleted that particular charge? Very simple, very plain.
If by his plea he pled to
no, two. That's not what I asked you. I asked you, had the charging document been altered?
No.
Then why was your client entitled to plead to something less if the state hadn't reduced the charge?
I totally agree. That's a very interesting legal argument. And that was the argument I was prepared to have that day. Because there's no law in Nevada on that question about whether or not a defendant can unilaterally pick to plead to two theories out of three theories or whatever on a murder count. There's no law on that. I expected to have a vigorous argument on that particular issue. It didn't happen because the state didn't timely object.
So your position is because the state acquiesced?
Yes.
Then, in fact, it's allowed to be altered.
My position is that he pled, the court accepted the plea.
The question's not about the court. I'm talking about the state because that seems to be the pivotal link in the argument, whether or not the state accepted that.
I don't think the state was a party to the acceptance. The colloquy was between the judge and the defendant. The judge accepted the allocution. The judge accepted and understood the plea. If the state was not content with that, they had the duty to timely object before the plea was accepted. I'm down to 3 minutes. If I could, I'll wait. Thank you.
Okay. Pesci?
Thank you. What I've heard today is that this was intended. Defense counsel has told you unequivocally this was intended. Now, how would the state know that at the time? Because from the pleading documents, the actual motion by the appellant to plead guilty, it's articulated that he's electing to plead guilty to the criminal complaint. It was actually an indictment in this case, but in another portion of the affidavit of the defendant to plead guilty to the criminal complaint. Another portion of the affidavit is my desire to plead guilty to the criminal charges against him. There is no intention articulated anywhere on the record that the defendant was going to, as you pointed out, Justice Douglas.
Counsel, I am concerned. I understand your argument, but as Ms. Craig was represented to us, at the end of that, where the defendant says, yes, Your Honor, and the court, okay, and you use the deadly weapon, knife, is that correct? The defendant says, yes, and the court says, is the state satisfied with that? And
correct.
He says, yes, Judge.
Yes.
And is there no duty with the state?
Here's the reason why. I was on no notice that she had shook her head no. In capital litigation, I'm in a capital case right now. The record is so critical. Everything has to be on the record. Where is the record? Please turn to it. Where in the record do you have her shaking her head no? It's not there because it's a nonverbal communication that counsel had with the court. The way this all went down, you know these courtrooms. The defendant was not seated at defense counsel. He was in the jury box. Counsel for the defendant was in the box with him. I was standing there reading my information, my indictment, following along to make sure I could follow along. She's nowhere in my sight. And why should I have to worry about nonverbal communication? Could you imagine if I were here now having to respond to some nonverbal communication that I had with the judge during a capital murder case? It has to be on the record. I didn't know that I had to say something because I didn't know she shook her head no. And let's go with it. She just told you that the court said, oh no, that's not what it said. You read it perfectly, Justice Douglas. And you did that. That act was willful, deliberate, and premeditated. Pause, as you indicated. It's the other theory. Okay. It was perpetrated by means of torture and or committed during the perpetration or attempted perpetration of robbery and or kidnapping and or sexual assault. The judge doesn't say, oh, not that theory. There's a hiccup, no doubt. The hiccup is because there's nonverbal communication from counsel to the court during the plea. And if we were to allow that, what message are we sending in, of all cases, capital cases?
Does this alleged mistake, does it overcome jeopardy? When does jeopardy attach in this situation?
Jeopardy is not attached at this point because he hasn't gone to the sentencing phase. The reasons for jeopardy is that you don't have, like the earlier argument, where you have somebody who's gone to trial and is going to have to go to trial again. That's not what happened here. It's a plea. You can undo a plea. The policy reasons underpinning jeopardy are not in play here. So this can be undone because everybody's not on the same page. And let's just assume for the sake of conversation, because I also heard something that just does not compute with the actual plea. You were just told that it was just felony murder. That's absolutely not true. Look at this, what we just read. He says unequivocally, it was perpetrated by means of torture and or committed during the perpetration or attempted perpetration. The defendant, yes. That's a yes to torture as a theory of first degree murder. Let's go to the murder statute. NRS 200.030. Murder of the first degree is murder which is perpetrated by means of poison, lying in wait, or torture, or by any other kind of willful, deliberate, and premeditated killing. McConnell is not offended. If you allow this to stand, which I urge you not to because it sends a message of just trying to play loose and fast, but if you allow this to stand, he still faces those aggravators by torture. Your decision in McConnell is not offended in any way, shape, or form by this canvas because torture is a means of premeditated murder. He faces the sexual assault, the kidnapping, and the robbery nonetheless. So if you send it back with this in place, please, we urge you, make a finding now that McConnell is not offended so that we don't have to come back up here in a writ because no doubt that will happen. You have your decision, McConnell. You know that that's the situation. He is still facing that. It's his own unequivocal plea. He didn't say, no, I didn't do torture. He said that he, in fact, did do torture. And Justice, if there's no any questions, I'll submit.
Colleagues?
No.
Okay.
Mr. Pesci said, how would he know? How would he know what was going on? His plea was out loud and on the record. I'm standing in the same courtroom with him. Justice Douglas, he pointed out what you repeated with regard to what Judge Leavitt said with regard to not that theory. It was out loud. If it was something odd and unusual, they need to pay attention. It's not our duty to go over and tap them on the shoulder and let them know that something's happening in the courtroom. We were in public, on the record. They should know the minute he said, I'm pleading guilty, or he said the allocution that he did, which was straight up felony murder, and there's no premeditation and deliberation. The judge heard it. She understood it. She was aware there was an issue, and she was paying attention. The question really isn't whether or not he can do that. That would have been an interesting question had they objected. The question is, under what grounds do they get to withdraw or force a withdrawal of a valid plea that the court has accepted and then adjudicated? Is it enough for the state to come in and say, I kind of wasn't paying attention to the allocution when it came out. I didn't realize that it wasn't premeditated and deliberate. I didn't hear the whole thing. I wasn't watching all the time. And I don't think that that's legitimate grounds to force a plea withdrawal on a defendant. And I do think that the Ninth Circuit has been very clear that jeopardy does attach when a plea has been accepted. And in that case, I think the plea has to stand. In fact, think about where we're at. If we go back, we're going back and going to trial on just the murder charge. Him having pled guilty now to counts 1 through 9. I don't even know how that's going to work. There's no presumption of innocence because he's pled guilty to all the underlying facts. There's no need to even have a reasonable doubt discussion, I don't think, because he's already pled guilty to all the underlying charges.
Let me ask you this. Your written motion that Mr. Pesci read from.
Yes.
Do you contend that your oral exchange with the court was consistent with the written motion you presented?
Yes, he pled guilty to all 10 counts.
And you think you adequately disclosed in your motion what you were doing?
Yes, he pled guilty to all 10 counts. He pled guilty to first-degree murder, and he was going straight to death penalty. I mean, there's no, he didn't gain any serious advantage other than the fact that I'm able to tell a jury that he pled guilty. He's still facing the death penalty on, with 14 aggravators. At best, if we win on our McConnell motion, he goes to trial with 10 aggravators. I mean, this is not a walk in the park. But going to trial on just the murder count, having pled guilty to counts 1 through 9, is an impractical thing to have him do. Thank you.
Questions? No? All right, counsel, we appreciate your arguments today. This matter will stand submitted. Court will stand in recess until the next call.